The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the Brothers Wisp.
Hey, everybody. This is Greg with the Brothers Wisp, number 145, coming from the motherland, Texas. What is today? Saturday? 7 at night? Feeling good. I'm feeling spry. I took a nap today. Man, it really drugged me down. It was one of those that took me like 45-minute nap that took me 2 hours to recover from. But that's neither here nor there, because today we have a lot of interesting faces. I'm over here looking at this panel of smart guys, way smarter than me. All of them have significantly better hair as well, so we're in for a treat, folks. Today we have Chad Walks. Where are you out of? I always forget, Chad.
The home of Coors Brewing, Golden, Colorado.
Golden Showers, Colorado. We also have Mikey Hammett. You're from Chicagoland.
Yeah, close enough.
you just smell for the pig farm near Chicago, and then you find Mike, right?
Yeah.
Accurate. We also have my doppelganger, another Greg, Greg Lipschitz. Did I say that right?
You did. Spot on. Excellent.
And you are from the sound of your accent, Melbourne, I'm going to say Alabama, Australia. Right?
Yes, the Alabama of Australia, Melbourne, Australia. So down what we're calling COVID Central here in Australia. And I have really good hair at the moment because we have not been able to get to hairdressers for a very long time. So picture me as a troll doll when I don't have it all.
That's right. You guys
back. Have
been like in and out of lockdown and doing all kinds of crazy stuff, right?
Yeah, I think we're up to lockdown 643 and a half at the moment.
Did you have to look at your arm at all the scratch marks you've put in there?
Yeah, well, we're not allowed to lick door handles in public, so, you know, it's rough.
Well, am I crazy, or did I hear that this is going to be like your last lockdown, that this is going to give everybody an opportunity to get the vaccine, and after this, you're just going to go the course? Or is that the UK that I'm thinking of?
No, that's kind of like us here, but, you know, do you believe anything politicians say anymore? So, you know, we're just taking it one day at a time.
Well, obviously, I live in Texas, so coronavirus, I mean, I think that happened for about 4 months last year. Other than that, we've been pretty much just rocking and rolling. So it's weird, kind of a little juxtaposition watching you guys over there locked down repeatedly.
We're all good. We just, you know, get out for our fresh air and our huff and puff every day and eat lots
huff
of Uber
and
Eats.
Puff. Is that a euphemism for smoking weed?
Well, I swear, when you walk around the neighborhood in the evening time, you might mistake it for something else.
Well, am I crazy, or is Melbourne a very liberal part of Australia?
Well, we are the world's most livable city, except when coronavirus rolls through, and then we're not.
Okay, fair enough. I won't press you any more on it. Thank you for showing up. First time face. I enjoyed it. Love it. Let's get the vegetables out of the way so we get to dessert. We have our two consummate sponsors here. I'll start with Tower Coverage. Tower Coverage is your RF propagation system to empower your network, real-time data metrics, enable your coverage area, reaching your customer base, and more. The industry's best RF propagation mapping system allows website integration for customer signup and pre-qualification. Use this data to scientifically plan network expansion and help your WISP succeed. Get a free trial today at WISP, or rather towercoverage.com, not WISP coverage. I don't know where I was going with that. But we also have our oldest and crustiest sponsor, brought to you by Sonar, a scalable, intuitive, and comprehensive ISP billing and operational support system. Learn more at sonar.software. They probably wouldn't appreciate me calling them crusty. I'll polish them up. I'll shine them up. They'll be good as new in no time.
That was me about an hour ago when you said, can you get through the shower?
Yeah, you could have double-dutied it in there, bud. This is...
Well, only morning here in Australia.
Gotcha.
So,
morning? Well, you said it's 11. That's awfully late to be taking your shower.
Well, it's 11 on a Sunday.
Oh.
So it's pretty
early.
So that's
like a weekday 8 o'clock?
Okay. Sure. Let's go with that.
This is also usually the part where we read new patrons. So folks that go to patreon.com/yourbrotherswiss, become patrons and support us. You also get access to our patron-only Slack. We don't happen to have any this go-around. Or if we did, I unfortunately forgot them. No, I never forget them. Never forget 9/11. So yeah, none this go-around, but hopefully there'll be some next time. So on the list, number one, Mike has it in all caps. I'm assuming it's Mike because he's going to be the one there, is Wispapalooza. You excited, Mikey?
I am. I've missed the last three Whisper shows, four Whisper shows. And so nice to get to one. It sounds like things in Vegas are going pretty well. So looking forward to that. I'm in the unfortunate position of having been incredibly busy, so I have no idea who's going to be there, who's announcing what, any of that stuff. One may call me ill-prepared. I did want to slip in. So every year they have a charity fundraiser. I always forget to volunteer stuff until the fundraiser is about one day from closing. So I made sure I messaged them early this time. Of course, they aren't ready yet, but once they're ready to publish a charity fundraiser, we'll be sharing a link to it. Every time they have it, I donate two one-year memberships to the Little Brothers Wisp. There are usually things much more interesting, like, you know, KMBM radios and things that you can't always get. You know, I see, like, licensed microwave point-to-point links, so that's like $10,000. A far cry from what I give. But, so once we share, take a look and kind of bid on stuff, there's a wide range of things.
There seems to be a few more LTE vendors on the list this year. So it's obviously a big thing that's starting to become front of mind for some people, with some spectrum becoming available.
Sure. I think it is looking kind of interesting in terms of all the exhibitors, as in with...
So I'm just having... I can see, like, guys like Ericsson are on the list this year, and Ericsson have typically been sort of not really in the WISP space, but more in the carrier space. So interesting to see that they've got a booth.
I wonder if they're going to try and... Because I would assume that Ericsson have always priced themselves out of the WISP market. So I wonder if they're going to be coming with a little bit more affordable equipment, or if they're just assuming that WISP are ready to start rolling out the big bucks for them.
There are some WISPs that have been rolling Ericsson. It was kind of, people wanted to see what was better than the KMBM PMP line. So they started looking at, Telrads and Bison to get a taste of LTE, and sort of figured out that those guys were the TP-Link or Ingenious of the LTE space. They started looking at Ericsson. And Ericsson is incredibly more expensive. I think one guy was talking about, he was about $30,000 per access point going into it. But the performance it wasn't like, we might be able to get, 2x2 streams, be able to get, bonding at some point down the road. It's a full carrier grade platform.
With any of these carrier grade platforms, though, the difference is light and day from a traditional Ubiq solution or a Cambium solution. It's a very different proposition that you're putting towards your customers as well. We've just had some spectrum open up here in Australia in the 26 gigahertz space, so there's certainly going to be a lot of people who are looking for some other solutions.
So we were just talking about LTE providers at Wispapalooza. So, Mike, you asked about swag. I sent you a brick of stickers. Did they make it over to your house?
Yeah. I haven't opened it yet, but...
But it's there.
Yep.
All right, good deal. So you got stuff that you can randomly attach to people and their things. That's good.
Sure. Yeah, I guess tangent off the radio thing, so if any of you listeners, viewers, whatever you call yourselves, patrons, see me, hit me up for some.
All right. Rock and roll. I've done t-shirts in the past, but that's so... dicey. It's like you never get enough of the right size. I learned from Disher one time. He was handing out ISP supply shirts, and he had like a bunch of extra larges, and he goes, I brought a whole bunch of IT smalls today. It's like, oh, yeah, there you go. So that's how I always think of extra large from now on.
See, down under, we call that FC rated.
FC rated. What, oh my gosh. Like, what's, there is zero swag at a conference that I want to keep anymore. Like, I used to just go and grab all the crap and constantly throw it away as soon as I got home. Like, I don't know. All I wear are black t-shirts anymore. It's like, I don't even have anything with logos. So,
one time I brought home 25 Microtik shirts.
All right, what did you make them? Did you make rags out of them or something?
He didn't have to wash for a month. I just gave
them away to family and stuff. They just didn't want to take them back to Latvia, so I took them. Yeah. There was a box, I took it.
See, when you've got kids, kids love swag. Like, you come home and you bring them stickers and pens and squishy balls and anything, and then there's entertainment for weeks. You've got to ration that shit out.
So whenever I'm doing conference-type things with StrayNet, I always take little rubber ducks. I just get, I mean, they're like super cheap to get like a big bag of them on Amazon. And people seem to love those things. And it's different. It's unique. So that's worked for me in the past. But I honestly can't think of anything that I want to grab and take. Although I did see somebody giving out like little plastic lightsabers one time. That was kind of cool, I guess. You know, they light up and everything. So
there are exceptions. The Rio last show for all the pads of paper that they had put everywhere. Because I find those little stupid pads of paper to be extremely useful to sit next to telephones.
Was it one of the other shows? I took home like a 3-foot stack of plastic cups from one of the vendors. And they've actually been quite useful because like we have all like glass cups and stuff. And so then like when all the kid, nieces and nephews and things come over, plastic cups for everybody.
I want to say the last mom we had in Austin, Thomas, gave away a TV. So he had to pick up a TV for his display booth. And he's like, I can't take this back to you with me. So I just
cheaper to give it away than it is to ship it back to home again.
It was cheaper to rent one, or rather to go buy one than to rent one from the venue. And so it's like, what am I going to do with this thing? So just give it away.
You do the classic like Best Buy where you go buy it and then 5 days later you go return it. Yeah, I don't want this anymore. Here, I want my money back.
I've done that with a window unit before. Like when my air conditioning broke in the house, everybody just lives in the bedroom for a few days until it gets fixed, and you return it. No questions asked. I'm a bad human.
And so then, like, back to the radios, though. There actually are WISPs that have been using Ericsson. There's actually one that actually they have. I remember a few years ago, they were kind of the, like, gateway to Ericsson. Like, Ericsson didn't want to deal with a bunch of WISPs, but since they were a WISP dealing with Ericsson, you could get whatever you needed Ericsson through them. Like an unofficial dealer type thing.
I think it's interesting, though, that, like, you look at the list and you go, Nokia's on the list, Ericsson's on the list. So clearly there's interest in the higher performance and more commercially supported equipment these days. And of course, it all comes with a price tag, both on the purchase price and paying for tax support and things like that versus forum support and community support. But I guess it's the repeatable installation. If all the big guys are using it, then people are obviously going, well, maybe I need to get serious and spend some dollars to get a known output on my network.
Yeah, it's the classic, you get what you pay for. And when I look at my carrier-grade stuff, it has uptimes of 2 and 3 years. And when I look at my cheaper stuff, it's got uptimes of 2 or 3 months. And I'm constantly monkeying with it. And I don't know the last time I logged into a DragonWave and did anything with it. It's just been running for years now.
And you certainly notice the difference in things like the processor and the latency on something like a DragonWave versus a Cambium Link. And this is excluding a PTP 820. Like a PTP 820 is fairly serious kit and Cambium's lineup. But if you're looking at a EPMP 3000L or something like that as a point to point link versus a DragonWave, it's just chalk and cheese. You're comparing an Apple to a Ferrari.
Yeah, and I think what people don't take into consideration is the amount of time you're going to spend in the coming months and years monkeying with that piece of equipment, and that time has a value to it. And at the, you get a couple of years out, you have more than paid for your carrier grade equipment that you spent thousands more But you spent no time with tech support on that since the day you installed it, and that's got a value to you.
That's one of those buy once, cry once scenarios, right?
Yeah. You just
go ahead and fork it out. But also, I was thinking about the number of carriers available to us that we can, you know, like buy equipment from. Is that at least in the U.S. it's shrinking because of government restrictions on like Huawei and other vendors, right? Like the Chinese manufacturers weren't able to use those products anymore. So, it's the cheapest of the cheap isn't necessarily available anymore. So why not take a look at some of the pro level products, I should say.
That's and a couple of other examples of vendors that I don't think have been to WISPA shows before that are in the big space. Well, so one, we've got NetSapiens. They've been at WISPA shows forever. They do a voice soft switch that, and I could be speaking incorrectly here, but from what I recall, if you were to put asterisks at the bottom, as not saying that it's bad, but it's just free open source, anybody can do whatever with it. And then like a full class 5 real soft switch up at the top. Not saying that the features, like not talking from a feature perspective, but from a scale, a big, does a grown-up company use them type thing. I'd put NetSapiens kind of in the middle because there are a variety of the larger WISPs that are using them to do their voice infrastructures, and some of the hosted platforms use them. But then at the very top, I would put Metaswitch and Ribbon. We use Metaswitch at the fiber company, and there's a ton of other companies that use Ribbon. I think there's really only one or two other companies at that level in the voice space. Both Metaswitch and Ribbon are here. So it's like, it's not just radios. It's like, everybody's like, oh, wait, who are these WISPs?
I think it's all about how can you drive revenue through OTT these days. It's not just about the delivery method. It's now what can I layer on the top to increase the average revenue per user. And if I can sell someone a TV service and a voice service and whatever else over the top, then why the hell wouldn't I do that to increase my ARPU?
TV service is so tricky over here in the U.S., though. I see a lot of people kind of shying away from it just because it's so scary. And to be honest, I'm mostly playing in like the millennial market. So like going after college students and stuff like that. And I couldn't give them a phone for free. I couldn't give them a SIP line for free. So it's, I don't know. I guess it just depends on kind of the clientele you're shooting for.
We're big on voice here in Australia. Like our business is purely B2B. So we do a lot of voice and it makes up a large chunk of our revenue still. But if you're in that residential market, for love nor money, as you say, you couldn't give someone a phone these days. Everyone's migrated to mobile.
And then on the phone thing, it's always interesting because, for years talking to WISPs and, so many of them have just, tried to avoid voice at they had put more effort into avoiding voice than doing it. And the ones in the U.S. have done so at their own peril because they didn't offer voice. So then they didn't qualify as a served area when the government decided to fund something. Mm-hmm. So then government money overbuilt them because they had been avoiding voice. And then, on the B2B side, I get it. Some areas there is no business. I look at some of the more rural areas, the more rural counties, and it's like, the businesses there have a two-line phone. They don't have an answering machine even. So it's like, so what are they going to do with with any sort of unified communications of any kind? They don't. They have no interest in it. But for those that live in the markets where you can do that stuff, with the fiber out, I spent $2 million building a fiber network to be a loss leader because who cares about the internet? You want the phones. I will give away this, gigabit fiber for $50 or $75 just so I can secure these $700 a month worth of phone bills. WISPs have been building their models on. Everybody wants internet. Yeah, they do. But the business the revenue comes from the voice.
Well, Mike, you, or I would say you and Chad, I'm just curious for you guys, serving people kind of out in the boonies and stuff like that. To me, I'm thinking that's probably an older generation. You know, they're probably more accustomed to kind of a physical phone. Do you guys sell voice service in that respect? Like a lot? Is that
we
a common thing?
No, and I don't do voice, and I will push them to, you know, an Uma or some kind of other provider that will take care of them for that. And, you know, I would say less than 1% of our customers ask us for a voice product. And that's true in the business world as well, that mostly our businesses are still are operating off of, they're small businesses, but they're operating off of their cell phones. They don't have phones on the wall. In fact, we've got a bar that we service. You know, that it has thousands of patrons that come in a day. They got all sorts of credit card issues. They've got a VoIP line from us that I just threw onto our 3CX instance. And these guys insist that they will not have a physical telephone in their unit, that if someone can't leave them a voicemail and allow to get emailed back, they want nothing to do with that. And so voice is kind of a non-issue for us. The only thing people ask us for every now and then is video. But in that case, we're directly beneath all of the transmit towers for the Denver metro area. So OTA is real easy to get around here. And so we kind of push them towards, hey, here's how you put up a set of rabbit ears, and then everything else they want is going to get streamed. But yeah, we've had so few requests for voice that I don't mind pushing someone away to Uma to not have to deal with the headache of spinning up a voice system for them.
Yeah,
I think if you go and look, if you go and speak to the voice guys, they're going to say that the wireless side of the world is black magic. And I think if you speak to the wireless guys, it's going to be the voice stuff is all black magic. Sure. Like it's there's always that whole us versus them. I think in between the network and wireless side, and then the voice guys, it's two really different worlds.
Everyone's got a cell phone, and really what they want is the internet, so that if they have crappy cell phone service, they can put in a repeater that allows them to get decent LTE, you know, like one of those little T-Mobile boxes, so they can have LTE reception in their house. They don't want a phone line. Unless you're 70 years or older, then you sort of are hanging on to that POTS line.
Sure. Yeah, it's for sure. Well, actually, with the fiber company, we actually do a bunch of DSL still, because it works for a lot of people. And then because we're on the copper pair, they get a POTS line too. So we actually have a lot of customers. A third of our customers have POTS lines because why not? It's there. Like, you know, they may never use it, but they have the service. And you know, every now and then you look, oh, hey, they babysitter or something called because they didn't want to use their own phone, or yeah, I don't know the reasons, but you know, there's some usage. But you know, it's kind of those weird how you think. I mean, you know, there are more cell phones in service than there are people, but yet people are still using even POTS lines. Yeah. Sometimes
I was talking to somebody, and I don't want to make up a name because I can't 100% remember who it was, but they were telling me that they do a lot of properties like in the Florida area for snowbirds and stuff like that. And they said it's really popular for like Canadians to come down. And so one of their big features is they'll give you unlimited calling to Canada. So they always have people buy their phone service. And I was thinking, well, that's actually pretty clever. So that was...
Sure, something to target your market.
That was like one specific instance where I was like, oh, that actually probably is a really easy sell and easy upsell. And I think they were saying that the majority of their customers actually take advantage of that. So there's one reason somebody would buy a line these days.
But to circle back, you know, at the list of exhibitors, I mean, there's so many that I don't even know who they are. I have to click on them. Tenda Technology, who's that? Of course, I read it, and I still don't know after reading their profile.
Tend to make TP-Link style home resi routers and things like that.
Okay, there's just so many of them in here. It's like, you know, we've definitely, of course, it could just simply be that there's been a lack of conferences in the telecom space altogether. So, oh, here's one.
Everyone's got budget.
Yeah, you know, they just want to get out there in front of people.
Budget, and the sales guys are dying to get out of their houses.
Yeah, which is fine. We'll take their money as, you know, as Whisper.
I haven't put pants on in 18 months, so, you know, we're all dying to get out of our houses.
Yeah, and he didn't do it for the podcast either, for you audio-only listeners, so maybe check out the YouTube.
This is why we're, you know, above the bench.
For sure. Yeah, you know, I mentioned sales guys wanting to get out of the house, and it's ironic. I'm finally, so I got hired in April of last year, and I'm just now about to start traveling a little bit for work, and my boss is like, dude, I'm totally going with you. But I've got it. Like, I totally got this. And it's like, I just want to be there for your first outing. You know, dude just wants to get out of the house. He's just dying to get out of the house.
the real question is, so what's your Amex limit?
I'm in sales, man. So I think we're doing pretty solid.
Oh, that's right. You could ask your boss, what's your Amex limit? Oh, okay. You can come.
That's what I was saying. I was like, well, I guess that means I don't need an Uber. You're just going to be chauffeuring me around everywhere. And I'm definitely going to be riding in the back seat, and I'm not going to allow him to talk to me while we're in travel, unless it's, you know, specific questions about the temperature or do I need a bottle of water or something like that.
Yeah, take charge.
And if he doesn't offer you mints, then you'll mark him down in his Uber score.
That's right. He better have like a chilled towel ready for me and a hot towel, because I don't know what kind of mood I'm going to be in, right?
But and so then also with Whisperpalooza, this will be the first time in the new venue. It's no longer at the Rio. It's at the Paris Ballroom. I think they were going to be using the new Caesars Convention Center that they built behind, but I think due to COVID, I think they're kind of tamping it back a little bit, not expecting as much. But so now you actually get a choice of a couple different hotels, Paris or Bally's.
That's like the one with the big Eiffel, or not the big, the small Eiffel Tower, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's cool.
They were there simultaneously with NAB, National Association of Broadcasters, which I think from an annual standpoint is the second largest trade show outside of CES. And then about a month ago, NAB canceled. And so all that convention space, all those hotel rooms suddenly opened up. But Whisperpalooza was at the exact same time. So things were really expensive there for a while, and now the hotels really want you to show up.
Yeah, I saw in one of the recent emails about hotel blocks and stuff, Bally's was like $40 a night.
Yeah.
For you know, on the strip hotel, that is cheap.
Really good. That's cool. Yeah, what is it? Nevada has... I think they have a face mask policy, right? Don't you have to wear a mask everywhere indoors in the state right now?
I don't think indoors. I think indoors it's a free-for-all.
Oh, I thought that was something that they passed. I know it was something that did pass, so even in casinos you have to wear a mask, but maybe they've lifted that by now.
Yeah, I've got in-laws that live in Vegas, and they don't go to the casinos anymore because everyone's there without face masks on, and they're still kind of nervous.
Yeah, makes sense. Hopefully everybody will be strapped, and they've all got their like on their hip holster, they got their hand sanitizer ready to go. So I tell you what, man, it's like a 50-50. I always get the con crud, you know, half the time. And so this one, I don't know, be super paranoid. I'm actually going to be taking a couple of plane trips, which I haven't done in, yeah, like 2 years now, it feels like, at this point. And so I'm going to be hyper paranoid, I'm sure, going through those. I know people who've been traveling, and they say it's really not so well. They said at first it really wasn't so bad. They were really spacing out flights, and now they're like, it's a free for all. Everybody's jam packed back in your planes and stuff. So, I'll mask, and then I'll put like a trash bag on myself, and then
full hazmat suit.
Yeah.
How about instead of stickers, you do the Brothers Wisp face mask with the logo on the front?
There you go. Why don't we be responsible for anybody's health or safety?
Get a waiver before you put it on.
One of the internet exchanges here in Australia did that. They did face masks that said, we make your cat videos work.
That's cool.
Nice. All right, yeah, so we've probably talked about Whisperpalooza long enough, and tangents.
You guys ready?
So Facebook.
You ready to talk about the Facebook outage?
Sure.
Which was pretty bonkers. I know everybody in the world has heard of this at this point. I guess there's enough postmortems out, and the Facebook engineering group finally put out enough. I mean, the one they put out on day of was pretty ridiculous. You know, it reminded me of some of the after action reports we've put out for various customers in past lives at places. I think
that was more legal and marketing, though.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, their stock, that was one of the first questions I had. Like, they're down for 5 hours. I wonder how much money they lost. And I was thinking just from transactions and various things like that, but I wasn't even thinking about their stock price, but it took a pretty good hit, didn't it?
Yeah, $47 billion they lost in
5 hours.
Those 5 hours.
That was stock price, though, right?
Yeah. Right, yeah. Yeah.
That's rebounded right back again, I'm assuming.
I'm going to assume so. I'm going to assume that you know, everyone, you know, if you were looking at Facebook stock, that's probably when you bought it, was, you know, that day or the next day. But it was just looking at that crater, is like, oh, they're not doing so good.
Yeah, I thought it was cool because it was the first time I saw BGP in the news anywhere, and I saw several experts trying to explain it, and it was pretty bonkers. But I mean, you know, you got to remember the audience they're trying to talk
bonkers,
to.
Bonkers? You mean awful?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because,
well, it wasn't just BGP. It was any other three-letter acronym that they could throw into an article and make an absolute balls up of describing what it is.
I know. Wouldn't it have been amazing to actually get the nod to get on there and then just make something up, just something crazy?
I think every article that I read, it was just people who had gone onto Google, done a bit of a search, copied and pasted the same swag of text, dumped it into their article, and gone, yeah, it's that's the problem.
I saw the producer that worked on one of my LinkedIn learning courses, where it was the networking fundamentals. They shared out the BGP section from that and like made it free. I thought, how hilarious. This is great advertising for me. It's like, yeah, go ahead and pump that thing out there. Amazing.
I don't remember which news agency it was now, but one of the news agencies that was talking about it, I saw screenshots of their cast. And they were talking about BGP, but it wasn't Border Gateway Protocol. It was something else. I'm trying to find
something
it now.
Completely unrelated. Yeah.
Yeah. Like they didn't even be bothered to Google what BGP was to figure it out. They just.
Oh, they had diagrams in there. It was just the wrong acronym associated with the diagrams. I remember that.
I think it was Bridge Gateway Protocol. I've seen that floating around. That seemed to be what people grabbed onto. Yeah.
But
don't go too hard on the Mikey. There's been budget cuts in the research department.
Yeah, no kidding. I was reading some of the postmortem they had, you know, which was still a little bit light on details on the network outage. But from what I recall, they basically said that they were making a backbone change, right? So backbone, I guess, to the routed infrastructure that connects all their data centers together. They have some kind of compliance system that whenever they attempt to make a change, it's supposed to vet all of the configuration changes. That failed to catch this mistake they had in the configuration, which then took all their global routing offline, which then obviously bumped the DNS infrastructure, the other three-letter acronym that everybody was floating around, right? Because even when their routes came back, their DNS infrastructure was still offline. And what I found out was it's because whenever their DNS servers, like the clusters, lose access to, you know, other portions of the network, like they can't reach the backbone, well, then they automatically remove their BGP announcements, which makes sense, right? It's like you have a cluster over here in some specific area that for whatever reason they have a failure. Well, let's just remove ourselves so that we're not part of the problem. Well, when you have a backbone snafu where it takes every data center off simultaneously, well, obviously you're not going to reach anything. So they, I mean, whole hog pulled themselves entirely off the internet. And as they were saying, it affected not only external resources, but internal resources. And so it took them a long time to get through into their data centers, right? Get the right engineers in there. Because normally not guys, they're going to unplug stuff and plug it back in. They're going to plug a cable. They're going to run a cross connect. They're not the guys that are going to be logging into your infrastructure, right? Your backbone engineers are probably guys that are just scattered to the four winds. So I'm sure it took them a little while to get there for one, but then to get through all the security pieces. And then they said that, I think they described it as their network infrastructure, like actively fights you from trying to make configuration changes in the way they had to fix everything. So that's, I guess, an additional security feature in place. But it's probably more speaking to their automation systems that are trying to prevent them from making localized changes. Right.
Well, you've got things like where you're doing router-based Docker instances as well, where you're effectively containerizing your network stack within a Docker instance as well. So, withdrawing the BGP prefixes as part of that is probably some safeguards built in, so that if Docker or if their stack crashes, that it doesn't go and create other problems for them.
I'm also guessing that these NOC guys are spread throughout the entire world, and they're using their company's products to communicate with each other. And so when you take the head off the serpent and you can no longer communicate with anybody, now everyone just becomes an island, and they can't communicate with anybody else. So there was, I'm sure, an hour or so of trying to get Zoom and Skype and whatever other methods of communication that are still operational, just to get to talk to each other, to figure out what the heck's going on.
There was a fantastic meme on Reddit that said, my first day at Facebook, I sent a big fix to production and left for the day. I think I did a great job. Nobody said anything on our internal Facebook group page, and my boss said he'd message me on WhatsApp if anything came up. Can't wait for tomorrow.
That's terrific. Yep. Well, something else I gleaned from that article is they're saying, that we lost network connectivity, so we couldn't make any adjustments, which to me says they don't have any out-of-band management on their infrastructure where they could backdoor it.
Or it's not tested.
Yeah, well, you'd think at least at one location. Well, even if they could get one location, if it failed and all. Yeah, so they just didn't have a really robust out-of-band management system put in place to be able to. Well, I mean, who plans for a catastrophic failure like this? But also, you would think somebody at the Facebook level would.
It's a really good chance, though, as smaller WISPs to actually go and spend some time on that disaster management and think about, so when custard really does hit the fan, what are we going to do and how do we do it and where are the weaknesses in our network and what are we going to do to make it so that we can actually recover in a timely fashion? Going and reviewing your out-of-band management, going and reviewing your spares and things like that. You know, these things happen, and I think we've just got to accept as technology-based industries that, you know, it's going to happen. It's just a matter of when, and plan for failure, because if you don't, then you're going to end up, running around and chasing your tail for a few hours trying to make it right. And it's really hard to do that when customers are calling you and yelling at you.
Yeah, for sure. When everything's on fire.
It's and I can't recall where, you know, what my sources were for this, but I've heard from more than one source that all of the hyperscalers, they do an inordinate amount of testing all the time. They will, you know, not just, you know, hacking their stuff, but, you know, they'll have somebody go flip power breakers and they'll, just turn various things off. You know, they'll go, you know, unplug routers and things. And what happens? You know, they're not the people that are doing this aren't letting those in charge of fixing it know. Like, their job is simply to discreetly go break stuff.
Well, the last line in the Facebook article, in that Facebook post, says, from here on out, our job is strengthening our testing drills and overall resilience to make sure that events like this happen as rarely as possible. So it's clearly in their mind that, you know, shit happens. It's just about how we deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, working for a data center where we had 100% SLAs on everything, you know, we would run through scenarios every year. We'd sit down and we'd come up with scenarios, even to go as far as like, all right, there's a zombie apocalypse. You know, what do we do it? You know, I mean, it's like, because you had to really start trying to like come up with these far-fetched ideas of, you know, this crazy thing happens. Well, let's look and see how all the dominoes, you know, fall. It's just to try and get outside of your normal patterns of thinking. So it's tough to do, one, but also diminishing returns. How far down the redundancy rabbit hole do you go before it's like, it's such a rare chance that I'm not going to put any more money into building that redundancy on that infrastructure. And we hit occasionally like a perfect storm where this thing failed simultaneous. There was this other specific issue, and then this other thing happened to happen at the exact same time. So I remember we had like a cut. It was like, we had a level 3 circuit and a CenturyLink circuit before they had combined. One was a point-to-point, and they were supposed to keep those separate. Well, the companies combined, and without telling us, they aggregated the transport for those two things, you know, into one. And then so one of the backups was coming over the point-to-point. Well, that failed, so it took out a primary and a backup. And then the other third provider the transport that we were using for them happened to flicker at the exact same time. You know what I mean? So it's like all of these crazy things have to happen in tandem. And it's like, I can only account for so many crazy things. And it's also a numbers game. It's math, right? It's like, how much money will it actually cost me to put this redundancy in versus what is the likelihood of this failure? So I don't like gambling. So I've been to Vegas several times and I've never spent a single cent on a slot machine, because like, that's not my game. I don't enjoy playing games of chance. And stuff like that would always give me heartburn and indigestion trying to figure out how
far. But a big part of that is you're putting your trust a lot of the time in third party providers. So like you've said there, you've got two carriers who have combined. Well, that's no different to getting a diverse dark fiber path from another carrier, and they give you all the cable paths and they say, yeah, we're going to enter via two different paths into your facility. And on the day that the guy's going out to do the pit and pipe infrastructure work, all of a sudden, oh yeah, there was some rocks there and we couldn't get through to run that way, so we did it the other way, and they at some point cross. It's going to happen. You've just got to, you know, plan for failure.
Yeah. I remember after one of our outages, before I put in like the the Border 6 system that did like route optimization or whatever, as controversial as that is, before that happened, we had an outage and my boss said, you know, it's like, how do we ensure this never happens again? And the analogy I had is, it's like driving your car on the road, right? It's like everybody has this understanding that you stay in your own lane, you don't run into people, and you try and be defensive. But at some point, everybody else is out of your control, right? I can't guarantee somebody's always going to do what they're supposed to. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's tough. It's tough to do that stuff.
It's hard as you try that one day someone's going to land a Cessna 182 on the highway as you're driving down. And I never saw that coming. Right. How do I prepare for that? Do you guys have, sort of related, like an internal term when you send a command to a device that doesn't have out of band and you cut it off from your network? Like, we call that cutting your nuts off. What do you guys call that when you do that to a devices in your own network?
I call it a Tuesday. Well,
I call it every time. Well, interacting with the device, because I don't have the out of band management I want. It's just everything I do is that.
Or this is a teaching moment, so we call those sometimes too.
It's that moment where your heart rate increases and you haven't actually worked up a sweat.
Oh. But you don't have a term, like if you send a network tech out and say, hey, if you do this, you're going to cut your nuts off. Like, there's no, you don't have a term for that.
I think it sums it up pretty well.
I mean, that is accurate. That is very accurate.
I think that's our Monday morning huddle is we're going to introduce that new term.
Yeah. Or a quick sweat. Like, you do something and then instantly you're just, sweating. Or anytime I would reboot a backbone router when I was doing maintenance from the house. And you have the ping dash T running. You're just waiting for it to come back. Should have come back by now, I think. You know, of course, they always take an extra 30 seconds.
And by that point in time, you've grabbed the keys and you're walking to the car. you've started the car and you've backed out the driveway and you get three blocks away and then the SMS alert goes off.
Yep.
Oh, it's all good. Going back to bed now.
Yeah, it's the worst.
I think it's just a timely reminder that, you know, it's the whole. Failing to plan is planning to fail. It's going to happen. Just make sure you spend some time on this in your business.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's not if, it's when. Have, it's going to happen.
Have the dirty conversations about it, because it's going to happen. Just don't let it be for silly little things if you can help it.
Yeah. And something else that was always really important to me is be as absolutely transparent as you can with your customers, because you're talking, for the most part, right? I can't say it was like all of our customers across the board, but they're intelligent engineers. They know stuff happens. They are going to smell a pile if you're trying to sell it to them, you know? So it's just be as transparent as you can. Say we screwed up and we're taking steps not to do it again. And most of the time, people were totally cool with that.
So on the topic of out of band, I know it's come up in the in the Slack channel a few times about people rolling their own out-of-band management devices versus buying something like Open Gear. What's your thought on that, Chad?
I don't have a great out-of-band. I've got a couple LTE routers throughout the network that allow us to come in. And now because LTE is mostly IPv6 only, they have to call out to another device somewhere else that's not in our network. My house is one of those because I'm on my own network. I have an LTE router in my house that calls out to a data center that a friend runs. And so that really is my out of band. I wish I had a really good policy on that. We have a lot of upstreams. We have a lot of redundant fiber. And so we haven't had to use out of band yet in the 6 years we've been in business. I've cut my nuts off a few times. That's required me to drive to a site, but I can't put out of band at every single tower site in the network. And so our core has got out of band.
That's interesting you say that, because we've taken the exact opposite approach where we actually do have out of band at every single transmission tower.
I like that.
For exactly that reason. The cost of a 4G device these days is so cheap, and the cost of a SIM card is so cheap, that to have that out of band and being able to get in when you do cut your nuts off, it can save you hours of driving across town. Like from one end of our network to the other could be 350 kilometers from one end of the network to the other. You don't want to be jumping in the car for that sort of stuff.
And geographically, we're a lot smaller geographically. We're within about 5 square miles total.
Yeah, okay.
And so it's a little bit easier to get in the car and run to a tower site and reboot something or whatever.
Yeah. But you made the point before about, time is money. You're going and spending the money on quality equipment. That's, I guess, the approach we've taken, is that time is money. If we can't do maintenance on our network and know that we've got another way in, what's that going to cost us in reputational damage, in customer outages, in frustrated staff, in jumping in the car and rolling the truck? Like that all of that costs money at some point in time. So for the small price you pay for a 4G device, what's it really going to give you?
Yeah. I'm doing the same thing. Like all my core areas, I'm doing WAP LTEs that tunnel back to the data center and tunnel back to my house so I can backdoor. But not only for situations where you screw up configuration, but I also like it if for whatever reason there's some weird power event and I lose everything there. If I see, my connectivity to the site go down and my backup out-of-bound device goes down, I'm like, oh yeah, okay, we just lost power. So I immediately can diagnose those issues, because that's always kind of like at these apartment complexes. I mean, just weird stuff happens. Like one of my IDFs, for whatever reason, they wired in one of the wall outlets outside into the same circuit that my IDF hangs off of. So every time the carpet cleaners come through, they trip the breaker and that IDF goes offline. It's like just dumb crap like that happens, right? And random stuff. And then, the maintenance guy will occasionally just flip a breaker and not even think about it, right? So that's nice to have that kind of stuff as well.
That sounds sounds like the cleaner in the hospital who unplugged the life support to do the vacuuming.
GFCIs are our killer, because all of our stuff primarily is outdoor, which requires a GFCI circuit. Mm. And every time a lightning storm comes through, whether it's anywhere close to that house or building or not, it trips a GFCI, and then we've got to roll out there and push a stupid button on a circuit.
Big pain in the butt.
So on the fiber company, we don't have that many locations because it's, with the, fiber and, copper infrastructures, things aggregate pretty nicely. So I can have, one spot where I could connect to. I mean, I don't have this many, but, I could have thousands and thousands of customers off of one, one rack. But the problem is that we don't control the facilities. So then we're required to have NEBS compliant equipment. So then that really narrows down what I can deploy. And then, it has to be negative 48 volt power, or I'm building a whole nother, AC infrastructure to power it. When I started going down that road, I was like, okay, well, I found this Cisco router. It can do this, it can do this. It has all the things I need. It actually has two redundant, negative 48 power supplies. Everything's reasonably cost. It supports T1 cards, because at the one location I want to do some SS7 to SIGTRAN translations. I can plug in an ADSL card because then that costs me not very much. And so this and this, okay, great. And then I buy the stuff for two locations. I hand it over to somebody to configure because I'm not that familiar with some of the, you know, SigTran translations and ADSL usage on you know, Cisco gear. Hammering around. As it turns out, it's end of life, which I knew it was. I was like, fine, I'll just download the software, whatever, I'll move on. Except Cisco no longer had the information available, so I couldn't get the software. And so then it's hunt and peck, just going to buy stuff, hoping you get one that has the right license on it, because nobody's tracking if you have the license that does SigTran translations. So I bought the gear to do it, and then it didn't work. Okay, let's go to a newer version. Oh, this one doesn't have 48-volt support. Let's go to the next newer version. That one doesn't have dual power supplies. This one does have dual inputs, but not dual power supplies. So then you go to the next new version. And then finally, I'm at $26,000 for a router. I'm like, okay, let's rethink what we're doing here. And that's not where the project sits. It's like, I only have to buy six of them to do, or seven of them to do everything I want to do. At $26,000 a piece, that really adds up. So someday I'll figure out how to slay this cat a different way.
Fair enough.
That's a hard one though. Like, you know, you can do all the research under the sun. Sometimes it's costs money to learn.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that, like, if Cisco's product line was more consistent, like, oh, you know, here's the replacement version, it's not the same. You know, because I'm not a fan of buying new hardware because it's like I'm not doing anything with it. It's sitting in a CO. It's, you know, so it's not going to be subject to weird environmental conditions. It's, you know, it's doing management. So I don't need it to do, you know, 37 gigs of throughput. I need to do like 2 megs, maybe. You know, there's a lot of circles in that Venn diagram, and I just haven't found just haven't found where they converge.
I've had good luck in the past. It's been a long time since I've had to do it, but finding a hardware reseller that also does like their own version of TAC support, like they'll like sell you support or whatever. Usually that means they have some pretty knowledgeable guys inside, and if you've got a motivated sales guy, he can tap on those guys and say, hey, you know, what's the replacement for this? You know, you can like get them on the phone and have a conversation of, well, this one is one or two generations newer. Obviously, it's not the new stuff, but you can still get support. You can do blah, blah, blah. So that's always been a good resource for me because I've noticed the longer I get from like actively doing engineering like all day long, the more stuff's just falling out of my head. And there's all kinds of new hardware that I am just not abreast of or have no knowledge of. So I'm more increasingly leaning on people that can help me.
We've had really good luck with Curvature out of Singapore, but they've got worldwide branches and similar thing. You just say, this is my the recipe that I need to make my cake, and they come back with you. They come back with a shopping list, and it's really good. And their support has been phenomenal. We've had a couple of line cards go and some gear, no questions asked, DHL or FedEx, and you've got a line card within 48 hours.
That's pretty baller. Yeah, usually with the gray market stuff, though, it's usually inexpensive enough to where you can keep a spare on the shelf. Or at least we always try to.
We self-spare. That's one thing we've learned over the years is we have a 680 square meter warehouse here in Melbourne, and we self-spare every part imaginable within our network. We've always got equipment, everything from cables to radios to switches to routers to even tower sections, because we just know that we need to be able to do it ourselves, being on this massive island many, many thousands of kilometers away from anyone. And then you get problems like shipping out of China and the US, which just becomes a nightmare. There's many, many WISPs here in Australia who can't get stock at the moment, and they've got customers lining up for service, but they don't have subscriber modules, for instance, or they can't get PoE injectors. Big problem. So yeah, we self-spare a lot of our own equipment for exactly that reason. We can
When you self-spare, is that part of your rolling inventory, or do you set aside inventory that is 100% dedicated to spare, and if someone takes something off the shelf, then that triggers an alert or replacement or whatnot. It's not part of just an inventory package.
Yeah, absolutely. So we make sure that we've always got extra stock on the shelf, and the guys know that if they're taking stock off the shelf, we regularly do the inventory, and we make sure that we've got enough to self-spare. You can't rely on the RMA process. That's what we've learned to learn over the years. RMA is great. You're going to get it replaced, but for instance, we're a big cambium shop. We know that there's delays. At the moment, our local distributor could be 6 to 8 to 12 weeks delay. So if he doesn't have stock, we're not getting our RMA. It'll get there. It's just not going to be next week. It's going to be 2 to 3 months away. And that's a huge problem. You can't risk that.
Cambium's RMA is a nightmare in and of itself. That, you know, we just got radio shipped in today that had been RMA'd about 6 months ago due to a firmware problem that bricked the radios. But they'll RMA them, and then you have to go back and find out, okay, who did I buy this radio from? Mm-hmm. So that particular vendor, and I think, oh, maybe this time it was ISP Supplies, and I send them the RMA, and they look it up like, nope, that's not in our records. Good luck. And then you go to your next vendor, because honestly, we buy so much Cambium stuff, I don't track which vendor, because the vendors on their POs don't put the serial numbers of the radio. So I really don't know where this thing came from. And it's so hard with Cambium to replace that.
But thankfully, we've only got one main distributor here in Australia for that. But we've actually been working with Cambium quite closely on their RMA process over the last probably 6 to 12 months. And it's about the whole, we've done the testing. We've provided you all the test results. We've done all the workbench stuff afterwards to prove that it's faulty. Don't come and ask me 20 questions again. Yeah. And you'll actually notice when you go and log a Cambium support case now, you've got one for technical support and you've got one for RMA. They're actually doing auto approval of RMAs on the EPMP range now. So I submitted an RMA for a 3000 full the other day, and within 6 hours, I had a full approval. No questions asked. Yep, you've given us a tech support file. You've told us what you've done to investigate it and troubleshoot it. Not a problem. Contact your local distributor. Here's your RMA number. So they're really, really focusing on trying to improve where they can expedite that changeover. They're realizing that there's guys out there who are doing the testing, who have gone through the 20 questions already, and we're coming to them as a last line of support to say, yeah, it's cooked. It's not going to work any further. And they're just replacing it now. No questions asked. So they've taken that on board. So I think you'll probably see that in the Cambium support portal. And yeah, pass it back to your local Cambium rep, because we've certainly been quite vocal here down under. It's about making sure that others are doing the same.
If you use one supplier, though, but with the chip shortages, you know, I might bounce between 5 or 6 different suppliers. And so we got all this Cambium gear pouring in from all these different locations. And that's where it gets tough for us.
So you just need a good stock. You need to do good stock control. That's the only real way around that is to use an inventory system and track your serials. But
yeah.
Every business has the same problem in that respect.
Yeah.
And Cambium has been pretty good with people that get vocal about issues. Several years ago, I was vocal about, I had some fires that I bought some Force 100s for, and it was my first time ever using them. I had to have them, you know, 6 point-to-point links ready the next day, and nothing was working in the assembly of them. And I was getting mouthy in one of the mailing lists, and I said,
"Not you, Mike.
I'm gonna drive this crap up to your office," and blah blah blah. And then they said, "Okay." So the next morning at 9 a.m., I was at their HQ. Here's all the radios. Figure it out. And sure enough, they had some manufacturing problems. And they had a guy that he disassembled each of the components that were having problems on each set of radios, and he fixed it and blah, 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 put it all back together. And I left with every radio put together as it was supposed to be. Now I know not everyone lives 58 minutes away from the Cambium headquarters. but you know, I got loud and they said, yep, we screwed up. We'll fix it. Some other vendors don't do that, no matter how loud you get.
No, but it, with Cambium in particular, my dad used to live 15 minutes away from Rolling Meadows, where Cambium headquarters is. So one day I decided to call up Sakid and say, hey, I'm down the street. I want to come by and see. And it was well worth my time because you get to put a bunch of faces to names. You meet a bunch of people that now you can directly email. So for those that are Cambium houses, if you find yourself in and around the Chicagoland area, I would, if you've got the time, make it a point to go visit Cambium HQ because it will pay off for you in the long run.
If you work with their guys, they're really, really good. We've been on the demos and on the beta programs now for like the Force 425s before they were released to the market. And we were working really closely with their engineering team and had direct access to their like the internal chat that they added us to that so that we could give them real-time feedback on that. And they're really, really helpful with that. We've had the dreaded GPS problem that's been around now since EPMP 1000 came out. And we're still talking to them about that. And in 4.6.1, you'll notice that there's actually a sensitivity screen now on the GPS receiver screen. So you can actually see how sensitive it's becoming. They're still not allowing you to turn down the sensitivity or adjust it, but you can actually see now what the receive levels are on the GPS module itself. So there's little things like that, that they are taking that feedback and then building it into the product. It just takes engineering time to do it.
Very nice. Any other manufacturers you would applaud for their RMA process? I haven't RMA'd something in so long. Like most of my Microtik stuff that breaks is cheap enough where I just throw it in the trash.
Oh God, the Microtik RMA, and I had a couple of those the 2004s when they came out. RMA'd them. They went back to Latvia. They never opened up the box. They sat there for months. They went back on a boat, came back over, got shipped to Baltic, got shipped back to me. Never once opened. They said, yep, everything's been fixed. That process with them where everything has to go back to their HQ to look at it is terrible. That's got to be extremely expensive for them to be shipping those things back.
It's only on certain value products, though. We find that on the smaller products where there's like PoE output problems on like a RB760, we contact our local distributor. They go, yep, it's in warranty. Sometimes they ask for a sup out file and we generally get a credit note and we move on with life. It's just they're more expensive. They've obviously got a US dollar tolerance. So they go, yeah, we want to kind of know what's happening here.
Yeah.
Who do you use for your Microtik kit over there in AU?
It's a subsidiary of Streakwave US.
Oh, okay.
So Streakwave in Australia, yeah.
Do you ever use, what is it, Duxtel?
I've used Mike at Duxtel plenty of times, yeah.
That guy's like so nice. Really helpful.
Yeah, no, Mike's lovely and his team. They're down the other end of Melbourne towards a little satellite city called Geelong.
Oh, very nice. Well, as big as your island is, it's still a small world over there, huh?
Yeah, well, when you've only got two distributors, main distributors who carry stock, it's pretty small.
Yeah, makes sense.
So there's only two in all of Australia?
Two distributors who actively carry Microtik stock. Yep, so we've got Streakwave Australia and we've got Duxtel, who are the two main distributors here.
See, now, I guess for Microtik, I would only have two, but in terms of WISP equipment,
there's another one in Sydney as well. He's got stock, wisp.net.au. He's also got some stock, Adam. So there's maybe three that are actually actively carrying stock in the whole country.
Wow. Yeah. Cause like for WISP stuff in general, within a 1 hour drive of me, I've got five or six stocking distributors.
Oh, you've got like Rocknock, Baltic.
Rocknock, Baltic, Air 802, CTI, Wave. Now I just saw there was one more. They're exhibiting at the WISPA show. So they're within an hour. So there's number six. Now they don't all carry the full lines. They don't all carry everything. You know, Air 802 is POEs and you know, cables and stuff, but it's still a you know, WISP centric supplier. So it's like, that's why I don't really have an inventory, because I just like, and that's what's kind of bit me here on, you know, some of this COVID stuff, because that's like, I've never had to. I just, oh well, Jim doesn't have it, I'll go over to Bill and it'll take me an extra 10 minutes to get to Bill's office. You know,
Yeah, ISP Supplies is like 12 minutes from my house, so that's usually where I go. Just right over there and pick it up.
Craig, have you got like 40 or 50 container ships sitting offshore in Melbourne and Sydney that waiting to dock?
Yeah, well, a lot of the equipment at the moment is actually stuck in China. It's actually just not getting out of China. Okay. The distributors are all saying that the equipment gets loaded onto containers in China and then it just sits there for months and months and months.
Yeah, wow. Ours are sitting offshore in LA and New York and Miami.
Is it just
waiting for truck drivers?
All the logistics companies are backed up or what?
It's almost cheaper now just to air freight. So a lot of the guys are actually just paying the extra money and air freighting because it's quicker and cheaper to air freight than it is to stick it on a ship. I don't know if it's the logistics companies, Greg, or if it's the massive COVID backlogs here. We had last week, I got a notification from FedEx saying that one of their distribution centers here in Melbourne got shut down for 3 days because they had an outbreak in the distribution center. So they had to just shut it down. So, you know, when you look at a major freight company like FedEx that just gets shut down and knocks out a whole city worth of freight for 3 days, it's a massive impact.
Yeah, that's wild. How's that not critical infrastructure for you guys? Just hand them hazmat suits and stick them back in there.
We're just doing the best we can. We've had one person at our office for 18 months in 680 square meters being really, really COVID safe. So everyone else is working from home.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm speaking of working from home, I'm never going back to work in an office for the rest of my life. Like I don't know. I'm enjoying this too much. Having said that, it was kind of trying at first when we were absolutely locked in, but now that I can get out and, you know, kind of venture out a little bit, I'm back to normal to saying I never want to work in an office again.
It's really interesting. We've seen both sides of it. So our team is all predominantly based here in Melbourne. We've usually got a fairly full office of about 15 people. And then we've got a couple of staff who are fully remote. And then we've got our overseas team in the Philippines who have also been working out of our office there. But since COVID hit, they haven't been together for 18 months either. And it's really interesting seeing which people work really well together, which people can work apart, and which people need the interaction to be with each other to be able to communicate better or to get projects done or to deliver certain things. It's really, really interesting just looking at the dynamics of the team. And we're certainly seeing that across lots of our other customers that we work with, as well as how it's all playing out over here. But you're right, there's a lot of people who will never go back to an office for anything other than maybe a town hall meeting. Yeah. or a Christmas party.
Yeah. Yeah. Like right now on my team, we are a whole big group of individuals. we are tiny little nation states unto ourselves, but we have one guy that is a very people-centric guy, and he is struggling. I'm not saying he's floundering, but he's having difficulties, especially since he got hired in post-COVID. I mean, I got hired in post-COVID as well, but I already knew two of the people on the team, right? Like, I had worked with one of them, like, for ages ago. So I guess to me that was a little bit easier. But this guy, but also I like operating on my own. Like, it's pretty much just, you know, give me the brief and then I'll go do my thing and take care of everybody, you know. But this one guy, it is definitely a struggle for him. So I feel for him, but I can't exactly sympathize, because it's like, that's not the way my brain works. Like I do work better.
So we're seeing our networking and our engineering team loving the whole lock me in a room and don't have to deal with anyone. Mm-hmm. But we're seeing our sales guys are really struggling because they want to be in front of customers. They want to be talking to people. They want to be engaging. And those are the guys who are like, oh, I can't go and present to a customer. I can't go and see someone. So that's a big change on the customer facing, the extroverts versus the introverts. It's the, no, please don't contact me versus the, we want to talk to everyone.
Well, I'm in sales now. So the presentations I give, I think would be more impactful and honestly, more engaging and easier for me to do in person. But I really don't mind showing up 5 minutes before I'm supposed to, talking for a couple hours, and then going and doing something else, all while wearing athletic shorts. You know, it's like, it's pretty baller. I don't have to travel or anything.
Sounds like you're overdressing.
Well, no, I have I have a closet full of button-up shirts over here, and I just switch a different one every day. But yeah, it's definitely
like a newscaster.
Yeah. I keep it real.
I had my sister's wedding in between two lockdowns here, and I can tell you now, putting on a button-up shirt, I think I went through every single shirt in my cupboard to find one shirt that fit.
I didn't say I buttoned it all the way. I buttoned the middle two buttons, and that's all you can see. So that's all I need to button. They don't fit anymore properly. So, yeah.
But then, you know, on the you know work from home, not work from home thing, it really depends on the person. And it really depends on the company, because if those two don't mesh, then it's not going to happen. Yeah. You know, the fiber company that I'm working with, you know, I work from home because I look at it as me driving to the office is simply time that I'm spending not working. Therefore, not a good use of my time. There's other people that, don't work.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, there's just no other way around it. They just don't work. Yeah. And so it's like, well, you know, now, you know, as of a couple of weeks ago, we have a new operations guy, and he's like, they're working out of the office now. So we can figure out what it is that they're doing.
Yeah. Who I feel for are brand new people, especially guys like coming out of college or brand new to the industry. I feel like them being 100% work from home, they're going to miss out on a lot, right? Because I remember when I first got started sitting in a NOC, you know, we were in kind of like this horseshoe shape, and there were guys sort of all around. And if you ever had a question, you could just turn and ask somebody, or you could overhear a conversation between somebody else, and you were always picking up new information. You always knew what was going on inside the environment. Like if one guy was working on something, he might mention it to another guy, and you're like, oh, he's about to break that thing. So, you know, I know what's going on, you know? So it's, I think you miss out. And also, like I've noticed new guys are like apprehensive to bother other people, right? Whereas if you're sitting in a room and you have a question, you just turn to somebody, you ask, that's a 15 second interaction, right? Whereas now it's like, I got to chat with them. It's going to interrupt them, or I try and call them. Heaven forbid we do a video call, which I actually prefer nowadays. Is I want to see your face.
I don't think it's just new guys though, Greg. I think it's everyone. We don't want to. Oh, he might be busy.
Yeah.
Well, it's about adapting to change and using Slack, using Teams, using something to keep that team culture alive and to keep the vibrancy going and to keep the communication. We've kept our we used to do a daily stand-up when we were all in the office. We keep our daily stand-up going now. Our daily stand-up in the office probably went for 15 minutes. Some days on Teams, we can have a daily stand-up that goes for 25, 35, 45 minutes because everyone's engaging and having a good time and talking a bit of crap and talking about their family and all the things that you just don't do, as you say, when you're in the office having banter.
Yeah, especially you guys, like in lockdown. I'm assuming this is a big part of your human interaction that you're getting.
Well, we've got some of our team that the only human interaction that they would have during the whole week would be coming to work.
Gotcha.
They live by themselves. They don't have family that's close. So them coming to work is human interaction for the whole week. That might be the only real person that they actually see in a week, and they're at home by themselves. Like, massive mental health toll.
Yeah. I know, to be perfectly frank, the Slack helped me get through COVID when we were, you know, locking down pretty hard at first. Like, that helped me a lot, but I knew, like, after a while, I realized it's not enough. Like, it's definitely helping, but it doesn't 100% bridge that gap. And then when I was able to actually go back and start playing pickleball again, you know, like being outside and like interacting with real humans, it was a night and day difference. And I realized, yeah, I actually do need other humans outside. I mean, I've my wife and my kids, you know, here, and we see each other all the time, but it's just, I don't know, it's different. It was that extra like 20% that I needed that I just wasn't able to get. So yeah, I feel for those young guys, those introverts that were forced into human interaction. I'm sure they're hurting the most. All right, you guys ready to talk about a little hardware?
What have you got for us?
All right, it's the Microtik newsletter. And to be honest with you, I'm not sure that any of this isn't already charted territory. I think we've talked about all of it. So talking about the CCR 2004 16G2S Plus, which is the new one that's running on the Annapurna Labs ARM processor. That looks neat, and it's coming in like sub $500 US to SFP Plus ports. This looks really interesting from a CCR perspective. I've got in one of my MTUs, I've got a 1036, which is honestly overkill for what I'm doing with it there. But you know, I'm doing a lot of queuing and things like that. And I'm wondering, you know, is going like at my next property, is going with another CCR. Obviously, I want to go with a CCR, right? The additional cores, because I'm doing a lot of queuing and things like that. And so I think, you know, the extra horsepower is probably going to help with that stuff. And I'm wondering, do I need to start looking at migrating away from the old Tylera stuff towards the new ARM-based cores? Because I think that's the future they're going to have. I'm assuming better support and probably more long-term support on version 7. But is it going to be able to perform as well as like the 1036? Obviously it's fewer CPUs, but they're saying it's got better single core performance. I'm not doing BGP on these things, right? Or any of the other stuff. I think most of the workloads I'm doing are better distributed against a whole lot of CPU. So it's, to me, in my brain, it's that balance of like, do I want to go the Tylera route, where obviously at some point they're going to sun down that technology, right? They can't support that forever. Maybe they feel like they can and they can limp it along. I feel bad for them if they think they can. But you know, the ARM is the future. I think better support.
Are you buying to implement now, or are you buying to implement once RadarOS 7 is a bit more cooked?
Oh man, if this next
that's the million-dollar question at the moment. Well, like if you're looking to get something on RadarOS 7 now, it's, you know, do you like to sleep at night or not?
Well, see, I was also I'm not going to take that chance. I was also thinking too, if I go like a 1036. That's like $1,000 US. If I go with this, it's $500. Yeah. So we're talking about, I'm arguing with myself about $500 difference. And if I go with a 1036 that I know is going to work well, right? Because it's already proven for me, and say 3 years from now, it makes sense to upgrade. No big deal, right? It's like, why am I quibbling over this? But I guess if I was doing a big giant project where I'm looking at 1,000 router boards I was going to implement, you know, maybe my decision making would cause me a little bit more sleepless nights or whatever. So that was just something that's been actually like popping in my head the last couple of days when I've just sort of been weighing the options. It's just like, what makes more sense here? Should I try and future proof a little bit, but I know this other thing is going to be able to, so it's like, I think I'll just go with the proven technology that I know works, because the price difference isn't that big a deal.
I think though, if you're not doing OSPF and you're not doing BGP, that RadarOS 7 is a much safer bet. And if you're looking at putting these in some MDUs, we've got a few 2004s that we're getting ready to deploy because they don't need that functionality. I'm about to change my house into one of the new 2000 series to kind of play with it on OS 7, because I don't need OSPF and BGP. That they seem to be a little more stable and solid if that's all you're doing, and now you're future proof.
Well, I'm definitely keen for FQ Kotlin and Cake. Like at the MDUs,
yeah.
I definitely want to start implementing that stuff, but I don't know that it's fully baked yet.
We've been running 2004s with 645 stable or 640X stable for a while now, and we run BGP on them. Not full tables. This is IGP and OSPF, and they've been really stable. We've got a couple in our lab. We've got a couple that are in the core in just running some traffic through them, just so that we can see what the traffic profile looks through them. And we're not seeing massive issues there. But as you say, you want to use queues, you want to use FQKotl. Well, you're stuck with RadarOS 7 only. Mm-hmm.
And how well do we think RadarOS 7 is going to support the old hardware? You know, we see issues with Router 6 on the new hardware. I think we're going to see issues with Router 7 on the old hardware that we know is going to get depreciated pretty soon.
Well, it's going to come back to the kernels supporting older chipsets and the manufacturers of those chipsets having available drivers to roll it forward.
You know what I'd love to see, which I'm pretty sure we will never see in our lifetimes, is I'd love to see MikroTik announce an EOL schedule for the Tylera stuff. You know, just say, look, this is what we're going to hit end of life on this kit. Prepare accordingly. Just be ready. And I think the programmers probably inside would love to hear that, because from the sounds of things, they're having to do a lot of kung fu and just waste a lot of brain power over making sure the Talera stuff can still work.
I'm sure they'll get to that stage once they've got feature parity on Rad OS 7, where they turn around and say, okay, we're going to do like what Microsoft does when they do EOL support for their operating systems. We'll do security and patching, and that's it. And we'll give you a couple of years of that.
Yeah. But you know what? I don't think anybody would be mad at them if they did that.
Well, commercially, it's not going to be viable to maintain two separate code bases, especially when the kernel that they're running now is so far behind what's available in the market.
Yeah, I'll be surprised if we see fkcoddle on the Tilex, the Talera chipset. I don't think that's going to come. I think that's going to be a router OS 7, and I don't know that they're going to support that old hardware. So if that's something you want, I would maybe look at the 2000 series for your MDUs.
Yeah, but again, that's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, even if I had to replace 10 of these devices, not that big a deal, right? Especially as long as I had heads up. And I'm obviously, if I'm vetting a new like when I roll to version 7, I'm going to be very cautious, right? I'm going to put it at one property, and it's going to live at that property for a while until I'm 100% sure I've got all the bugs worked out and I feel comfortable with it, and then I'll slowly migrate, right? So it would give me time to do a hardware refresh on all these places anyway. So I don't know why I'm arguing so much about it. I think that's more an issue for folks that are, say, using the older 1009s or whatever, if they're using those out in their tower routers and they end up with several hundred of those, right? And then there's some version 7 feature set that's really just not going to work on the Talera that they're going to need to upgrade. You know what I mean? It's like, to me, that makes more sense. Those guys will have a heavier decision to weigh in here. So these are just
We're certainly in that boat. We've got hundreds of 1009 passive cools. We would have many, many hundreds of them. And we've been testing the 2004 for that reason. But we don't believe it's ready to put out at our towers yet.
No. What do you think about the 5000 series for replacement on those 1009s?
Again, it's really, really hard to get stock here at the moment. So I think I've got half a dozen of them on back order so that we can build up a little lab and test them out. But like anything Rad OS 7 at the moment, whenever we have engineering discussions internally, it's who likes to sleep at night and who doesn't want to have their phones beeping at them during the middle of the night. So we just don't roll that stuff until we've really got a good lab going. We've got two racks of equipment at the office that is our lab, and we build up towers in there and we test stuff and make sure that it works.
We've got a lot of 4011s deployed and a lot of power boxes out there that I'm looking at that 5000 series to start replacing those things soon.
Yeah, I remember I was a lot more risk willing to accept risk when I was younger. I didn't have any kids. We had so much free time, and then the more responsibility I got, it's like the less I want anything to do with being called in the middle of the night. I used to wear it as like a badge of honor. You know, that I got called and I took, it's like now, it's like I haven't been called in the middle of the night so long. Now it's like, I'm pretty sure I would come after somebody with a hatchet. So I'm very not interested in taking those midnight calls anymore. So I'm definitely on board with that. Well, let's look else, whatever they have in here. It's the Cap XL, which you've already talked about that stuff. They're talking more about the knots. They're showing some good pictures of the tokens, which I think we've already talked about the tokens because they've been out for a minute. They have the standard, then they're outdoors, they're calling it, or industrial, kind of more hardened. Looks like it's got a couple of screw holes where you can really attach to something. $10 versus $18. I don't really see anything too crazy in here. We've already talked about zero tier. Obviously, they finally weighed in on the Maris stuff in their newsletter saying that this isn't a zero day. It's basically people that running old versions that are compromised or they got compromised in previous versions. The user database was stolen and they never bothered to change the password. So nothing really.
We actually did some work with the Maris stuff with the code that was pasted in the Slack chat. Trying to think of the programming language that someone popped it in there, but we did some work on that and ran it across the network, and happily there's nothing on our network that's it's vulnerable, but yeah, it's good to go and check your stuff.
Looks like you can also just about block the upper level domain of XYZ and be okay as well.
Yeah, so there's a few ways to do it. You can do, if you're running, as long as your customers are using your DNS resolvers, then yeah, go and black hole the resolution of it. But yeah, it was the Python script that someone posted in the Slack group. One of our guys, Nathan, went and changed that up and made it a bit more friendly. And I think he committed that code back into the repository as well to contribute that one back.
Oh, but, very nice.
Certainly worthwhile going and doing that just to make sure that everything in your network is nice and clean.
Yeah, I think Jimmy dropped in a script that puts all the DNS entries in your local DNS server that you can filter about if you want. If you are so inclined. All right, well, that's all I saw on the newsletter. Nothing mind-blowing. Let's see. What else do you guys want to talk about? Chad before had talked about DPSK, the dynamic PSK stuff on his Ruckus, and he was unable to show up on that cast, so we made up a whole bunch of stuff, and he said that he had some corrections for us. You wanna lay that on us?
Yeah, I think by and large the discussion was good. A couple of the little minor points were we've been buying the H500s, the Ruckus. That's an indoor access point that's got four LAN ports on the bottom of it. The correction there is that their uplink port is still a gigabit. So the device is connected back to your switch at gigabit, but your four LAN ports, if someone inside that unit plugs up an Xbox in, those are 100 base Ts. When you jump up to the H510, which is the gigabit version of that AP, you go from about $20 gray market to just south of about $100 gray market. So it's a pretty decent price. But I found having a single SSID that allows your users to be online everywhere on the property, and with some properties this doesn't matter, but the couple we've deployed it in, it's really been helpful for them because there's common areas, you know, there's dog walks, there's gyms and yoga studios and that kind of stuff, and we've got APs throughout all of this, and their stuff just works everywhere on property because they've connected to their one SSID, and it is really slick. It's taken our support calls from two or three a week down to none since we've installed this about a year ago. So I can't speak highly enough of just spending a little extra money to go the Ruckus controller route and putting something where I've got that single pane of glass that I can control everything. And if and when our Ruckus controller goes offline, these devices just keep running. They don't have to talk to the controller all the time. Yeah, they'll just stay in whatever state they were in. We won't get the reports, but it just continues to work, right? So that part of it's been really nice.
You say spend a little extra money. How much? I know you probably can't give exact pricing on like what you pay for their controller, but what's a ballpark on there?
God, I think we were in for about ballpark of about $5,000 total for the controller and the licenses for, I think we're up to 150 APs now on that license. So that's a one-time expense. Okay. I don't pay the recurring support contract on that because we're buying end-of-life hardware, and so we're going to support that ourselves. So that's a one-time expense, and a lot of that we were able to get the MDU owner to pay for as part of their building infrastructure. So they pay for a controller that now we're able to use for a bunch of other MDUs that we roll on.
So do you try and stick your AP in a common area, or are you just putting it in a unit, but like every other unit, or what are you doing there?
No, we put one in every single unit. So they've got the ability to plug in devices where they see fit hardwire. We turn off the 2.4 and about every three units it's off. Because that propagates so much easier. Yeah. But yeah, we've got a 60-unit MDU, and we've got about 65 APs in there, including common areas, an outdoor one, and yoga studio, that kind of stuff. So everywhere we can stick one at $20 a pop, there's no reason not to. Yeah. One thing we learned early on is we turned off the DHCP server on the management side so that when someone disconnects, you know, takes the AP off the wall to say, oh, what's going on here? And plugs in their own router or their laptop into that management port, nothing happens. I learned that the hard way pretty early in. So now they get they get nothing. But if they plug into their own AP, it puts them on their VLAN, which is tied to their DPSK password. So everything is shared. So now they can stream to their TVs if their TVs are hardwired, and it works very well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny. I do the same thing on my port, so the port that's coming to my AP that's in the room. I trunk it, and then two, there's management. There's no DHCP or anything like that. So every now and then, I got one a couple of days ago. Hey, I plugged my router in and it's not working. I was like, yeah, I see my unit went off 1 hour and 32 minutes ago. I was like, by the way, it doesn't work unless you use my equipment.
Yeah, same thing. And that's the nice thing about the Ruckus is you can set up email alerts for any time someone unplugs an AP. You can get an email alert like, oh, unit 314 has disconnected their thing again. And we'll typically reach out and be like, hey, man, this is kind of a shared resource there that, you know, you got people below you and above you and next to you that might be connecting to your AP because reception's better. And so we really don't want those things unplugged because it's really a shared resource for everybody.
I was a lot like that. I was very proactive at first. And then, so I would call, like the management, say, hey, I see this room went off and, it's been at, I don't know what resident is. They just moved in there, I guess, maybe, or whatever. And they're like, oh no, actually we unplugged that. We were doing some painting and stuff. It's like, oh, okay. I guess plug it back in when you're ready. And I had one stay offline for 6 months. It was like, they pulled it off to paint and until a resident came. And so then I would just occasionally, after that, the next couple, I called them, and they were like, yeah, we're doing XYZ. I was like, all right, I'll just wait until the resident calls if somebody happens to move in. It's like, I'm not going to sit here and do this all the time. It's like, so my good intentions kind of came undone. So I just wait for people to call now.
It's my OCD of logging into Ruckus and seeing red lights on there. I'm like, oh, this is no good.
Yeah, I don't like it. I definitely don't like it. But then, it's funny. They had this big rush of move-ins, and then all of a sudden, my dashboard went green. I was like, okay, good. I guess they had to plug all the crap back in there, so. Good.
So have you looked at using something like .1x to do that security layer as well and putting and using certificates to do it?
No.
So that when someone plugs something in, it just does nothing?
It will never do anything, no matter what.
It will never do anything because there's no certificate on the device.
Yeah, even if they put it in the right VLAN, it'll still never do anything.
That's certainly something that is worth thinking about if you're rolling devices and you want it to be secure Use .1x and some radius on your devices and it'll drop it in some smarter switches and it will just drop it to the right VLAN. It'll verify that if it's got the certificate, it'll do something. If it doesn't have the certificate, it'll go meh. And user gets nothing.
Yeah.
And then you can turn on things like DHCP server again and make your life a little bit easier.
I like to trunk to that room so that I can have management on a different VLAN and then all the users get shoved into the user VLAN so I could definitely separate all that traffic and stuff like that. So that's like an easy way for me. I guess you could probably fudge it by doing some MAC filtering on the management VLAN as well, right? Like if it's not coming from, MikroTik, I doubt anybody. Although, if somebody's
there's some smart little shits out there who will plug in and start sniffing traffic. Come on, who hasn't been to a hotel, plugged in their HAP?
Absolutely, started
sniffing or, cracking out the screwdrivers and removing the controller that's on the wall in the hotel to find an Ethernet cable behind it to plug it into your HAP to work out what you can get to,
or finding the voice VLAN on the IP phone that's in the room and then putting yourself in that same VLAN and then you magically get access. Or a lot of times scan the network, find the MAC address of the laser printer in the office and then just go unplug it and you get free internet access.
Mm-hmm. And none of us have actually done this, just for the record.
Not.
We're just floating things that we saw some guy do on YouTube.
Yeah, theoretically.
Absolutely.
Yeah, good times. The last hotel I was in, I actually saw they had a Ruckus AP in the room, but we got there late and we were leaving early. I was like, man, I'm not going to jack with this. I'm just going to bed.
Yeah.
But immediately, that's what my brain went to. It's like, wonder what I could do to this thing. Excellent. Well, we talked about DPSK previously in a podcast, but just to rehash, it's dynamic PSK. So as Chad said, he gives one SSID, but each user on their, router, you have a sticker that gives them a unique password. They use that password and it connects them to their specific resources. So the idea being once they authenticate In Chad's case, they can walk anywhere on the property and they're just magically connected to everything, which I think is pretty damn slick. I know MicroTik apparently supports the DPSK stuff, but somebody emailed in and said, yeah, you can do that, right? In the DPS and the security on the Wi-Fi interface, you can just not put a MAC address. You put a password in there and allow it to work, but it only works on the very first one on the list. It'll never match any other ones if you put them in there.
And Cap, they don't support that in Caps, man?
I'm not sure.
Does anyone use Caps, man? Like, really?
I use automation. So I use Ansible to configure all my stuff. That's what people have told me. It's like, man, you should really use Caps, man. I was like, yeah, I like using Ansible. Okay, I can just blop, do all that stuff.
And that Kool-Aid tastes good, Greg.
Well, you know what? It's like you got to do some manual configuration to the kit anyway to get it to work. So I was like, well, if I'm going to have to touch this thing and configure it, how about I just control it entirely through automation and not think about it?
The only other thing that I had on my list, you're talking about touching things for automation. And Mikey raised this, I think, in the Brothers Whispers, that Pornhub's traffic was up by 10.5% during the Facebook outage. Now, like, doesn't that just say a whole lot of what's going on in the world right now?
Well, we're talking about everybody working from home. I guess it gives you certain liberties.
The interesting thing on those statistics is that the usage only went up for 2.5 minutes at a time.
Oh my goodness. I have no comment. You know what? I used to pop into Facebook every now and then, and you know, I was determined to say that it was like, you know, I'm trying to keep up with people, but nobody was ever posting anything interest, nothing that ever really added value. And I'm specifically talking about Mike Hammett when I say that. So I just decided, you know, it's like, what's the point? I just lose time. It just distracts me. So I'm done with it. I'm good. LinkedIn has become my new time waster.
You and me both. You and me both. Back in February, I said bye-bye.
Yeah.
I've been arguing with one of my Wisp friends about diabetes today. So...
Well, one, you're pronouncing it wrong. If you subscribe to the diabetes. Wilford Brimley School of pronunciation, diabetes. Let's see. What else do we have on here? So I was talking about my MDUs a little while back, and I lost more optics. Man, those SFP pluses from FiberStore, just a standard single mode 10 kilometers. I'm going through them like Tic Tacs. And when I pull them out, they're so hot, you can't hold them. You got to set them down until they cool off a little bit. So I think they're just right in those rooms. While they are like hot, they're not like, I mean, they're not like boiling hot because they're in the middle of a building. Some of them have those instant water heaters in there. So those rooms are a little bit hotter, but still it's like I could be in there and I wouldn't be sweating. So I think it's just the heat coming off those SFPs are just slowly killing them. So I took Nick Arellano's suggestion and I got some of the industrial SFPs. So FiberStore does have the industrial SFP pluses, but they have them all in Asia. And I was like, man, there's no way I'm waiting on those things. So they had like a couple thousand of the regular SFPs in stock. So I just got the industrial single mode 10 kilometer SFPs and I swapped those in. I put them in a Nexus 3064. That's my core switch. And I noticed that if you just shove them in, it's like throws a transceiver error. What you have to do is you have to tell it, you have to unplug it, say speed 1000, then plug it in, and it's fine then. It seems like it would be a little bit more intelligent to be able to sense what was in there because I got them Cisco coded, but it's neither here nor there. Plugged them in. So far, everything's been great. I switched all my backup links to those. So I guess as the 10 gig stuff dies off, I'll just swap over to the industrial optics and Bob's your uncle. I wanted have to give him a little bit of runtime before I just replaced everything. And I only went 10 gig just so I could say I had 10 gig to everything. I don't actually need it, so I'm just going to go with that.
Have you looked at Flex Optics or something as a replacement if you keep running into problems?
Yeah, this was kind of my last chance at running these. So Nick said, yeah, we were actually losing some optics as well, kind of similarly. So we switched to the industrial fiber stores and we haven't, I think he said he hasn't lost a single one since he's done that. So I was like, you know what?
Yeah.
I'll give him another go.
I can't say that we've lost a lot of them, but for the price that they are, we tend to just put them in the bin and move on.
Yeah. Well, the only problem for me is my MTU is 2 hours and 45 minutes away from me. So it's like, if an optic starts flapping, it's like, I really don't want to get in the car to drive out there. Well, I have backup links. So I switched to the backup link and the, I was about to say a four letter word, the unfriendly backup link was flapping as well. I was like, oh, that's great. I guess that one died in the heat as well. And just hadn't reported it yet. So I went down there, swapped it out with the industrial optics. By the way, the industrial optics are 10 bucks a piece, the SFPs. It's like, it's nothing.
It's pittance in the broad scheme.
Their SFP pluses are 28 bucks a piece.
Yeah, the industrial ones.
At a fiber store. And they're showing hundreds of them in stock in the U.S. I can get some in a couple days.
Well, when I needed them, they weren't here. They're all in Asia. So I was like, forget it.
We've even got a fiber store factory here in Melbourne now. So it's we can get fiber store overnight for a lot of their main SKUs.
Very nice. Yeah, I think we have two facilities here in the U.S. now. So we've been pretty good. Maybe somebody just picked up a big order of the industrial SFP plus. It's probably Nick. He knew what I needed, and he just grabbed them out from underneath me.
He just bought them all before you get them. Dick.
Anyway, so I'm hopefully I'm a new industrial SFP believer. Hopefully I'll be a convert, and I'll never have to worry about that again.
You got me thinking, because I got a lot of those cheap SFP pluses out there from Fiber Store. I should starting to buy some industrials and stock them up. I worry about that, because those suckers are really hot.
They're really hot. Out of the cage. Which, you know, I don't know. I've never had problems with this until this one specific MDU. So I don't want to 100% say that it's that. I mean, it could be we have power wobbles semi-regularly out there. So, I mean, it could be something related to that. So I don't necessarily want to say it's the heat. But honestly, an optic shouldn't be so hot you can't hold it when you pull it out. So I'm willing to bet that has something to do with it. Anyway. Also, last week, I think it was Thursday, I got to go up to Dallas for a little bit. And I saw Grumpy Old Matt, saw Colin Zapolik, and Doug Eames. So I've obviously met Colin before. Well, not obviously. It was like at the last Austin Mom, I think he was there. So we got to hang out a little bit. This is my first time to get to meet Matt, who does not live up to the grumpy title. He is quite friendly, as well as Doug Eames, quite friendly guy. So that was kind of like a little Brothers Wisp mini meeting and be a believer. Thanks, Mike. So I thought that was interesting. It got me thinking again about some people have talked about, let's put together a small Brothers Wisp thing. And obviously, I don't think the current climate's the time to do it, but it's kind of, I don't know, it's put a little tickle in the back of my brain that maybe we actually should look at doing that again. So fun. As long as somebody else arranges it and takes care of all the other logistics pieces, I'm totally cool with it.
There's a catch up on Zoom every, well, it's Friday morning, 10 a.m. my time. So it's probably like 4 o'clock Thursday afternoon your time, which is in the Brothers Wisp Slack as well. So jump in there, and there's always a few people hanging around in there. I think Jeremy does that one.
For all the crazy, where are those people from? Alaskans.
Yeah.
The state larger than Texas? Is that why you forgot? Because you can't acknowledge
it? Well, I mean, they're discontiguous. So, I mean, are they really a part of us? It sounds like an excised appendage. They don't really exist anymore to us. I consider them Russians. Honestly, they're so close to over there. But as Texans, I have to acknowledge that they are the most freedom-centric part of the U.S., I think, as far as that stuff goes. You know, like riding raptors while firing your machine gun. I think that's Alaskans. Do you guys have any important bits or pieces to put in here? Anything interesting? Anything that people need to hear?
No, thanks to you, I just spent $1,000 at Fiber Store on some industrial optics.
Yeah, I'm hoping. I hope they'll work as well for you as they did for me. I mean, it's so far they're doing great.
Time to hit them up for some sponsorship, I think.
Yeah.
It. So. So Chad spends his time buying useful things for his company. I spend my time pulling up memes and dropping them into the show notes.
I hear Victoria's Secret's got a bit of a special on at the moment, Chad.
Huh. All right. Let me go there next.
Yeah. We expect to see Chad in lacy lingerie.
I don't think my employee's going to like what I buy there.
I don't know that they sell climbing harnesses, but give it a try.
Yeah.
See what you can find.
I don't know. Carabiner on a G-string would be just fine. Nice and safe.
Regulation. OSHA approved. Hey, fellas. Well, we're at about the 2-hour mark, so this is usually where we stick a fork in it. You guys ready to close it out?
Sure.
All right. Yeah. So I'll go in the same order I started in. So, Chad, if folks out on the internet want to get a hold of you, what's your preferred method?
I think the preferred method is the Slack channel at Little Brothers Wisp. Hit me up there.
Oh, rock and roll, man. And speaking of Chad, he's got some Terragraph stuff. He's been doing a ton of Terragraph stuff, so we're going to be hearing more about that really soon. Right?
Constantly. Yeah, yeah. We've done the Cyclu. They're still working with them on some firmware, and we've been rolling out a Cambium kit. So I've got a lot of info on Terragraph.
That's cool, man. There's probably way too much in your brain right now.
Yeah, I'm liking it. It's I got to the point where I'm like, I can't test stuff anymore. But a couple weeks later, I'm like, yeah, they want to send me some stuff. I'll take some stuff. So so far, I'm a global thumbs up on Terragraph. If you know what you're getting into, it is performing well. Both kits that I'm working with are performing well.
Rock and roll, man. Looking forward to hearing more from you soon. I think we're going to do a podcast of just you doing a brain dump.
Yeah.
Rock and roll. All right, Mikey, Chicagoland, how do people get a hold of you?
Next week, you can see me in Vegas at the Paris Hotel at Wispapalooza.
That's right. He's got stickers for you.
Yep.
Excellent. All right.
Fly to Vegas and get a limited edition sticker.
If I could leave the country right now, Mikey, I'd
be there.
Very
expensive sticker. Well, if things weren't sideways, I think I would be there too. Greg. If folks want to get a hold of you out on the internet, I'm not sure if that's your bag or not, but how would you prefer that?
You can find me on LinkedIn. Just search my name or look in the show notes and I'll give you my link. Otherwise, you'll find me in the Little Brothers Wisp Slack channel.
All right, rock and roll. That's probably the easiest way to get a hold of me too is the Little Brothers Wisp Slack. That's patreon.com/LittleBrothersWisp. We'll send you an invite and you can join the community. It's not a cult. It's a community. I actually went and visited a cult last weekend. It was it's pretty awesome. I'm from Waco, and they do cults better than anybody else does cults. And they have this restaurant there where all the cult members, not all of them, a chunk of the cult members actually like cook the food and serve you and stuff. It was amazing. They even make their own cheese and stuff there. Man, it was so good. Whew.
Did you get them to automate it with Ansible while you were there?
No, dude. They're old school.
Well, then it's not
they're
really
long
a cult.
Dresses and, sleeves that go all the way up to the arms, and all the guys wear flannel and stuff. And before we went, I said, my youngest was like, not interested. He's like 13. He wasn't super interested. And I was like, bro, imagine the ankles you're going to see today. Whoo, you get a peek. And so that's all we could say every time we passed one of the women. I was like, bro, you see them ankles? He was like, girl, what them things do? Oh my God. We were having so much fun. Not to disparage anybody who believes anything for religious purposes. That's totally cool. It's just, you know, yeah, I'm probably not a nice guy now. I'm a bad person. That's okay. But you can also find me at my blog, gregsoul.com, or you can email me at greg@gregsoul.com or contact us at The Brothers Wisp with any questions, comments, any of that good stuff. Please reach out to us. Find Mikey at, Wispapalooza and buy him a beer or apparently give him a stack of cups or shirts or, you know, whatever other swag you have to offer. And so thank you, Greg. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Chad. Thank you, listeners.
Pleasure.
We'll see you guys next time. Now's the part where I talk about hitting stop buttons so that Tommy will get upset.
Tommy.
What you are missing, ideas and some good comedy given. If you missed the show already, don't worry, you're forgiven.